KBOO is a proud sponsor of the upcoming screening of Gaining Ground on Sunday, September 25th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. This film about growing food, empowering communities, and changing lives shows the obstacles to creating change, but it also points the way toward hope. The increasing threat of genetically engineered food and the destruction of local communities can make us feel powerless to effect change. Gaining Ground, a new documentary film, is an intimate view of rural and urban farmers embracing this challenge. Again, that's Gaining Ground, Sunday, September 25th at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information may be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland, where it's 11 o'clock a.m. on Friday, September 23rd. And it's News and Public Affairs Day. This is the part where you can really stand up and really show your support for news, information, and analysis that you get at a level that is not available elsewhere in the Portland Metro or down the Willamette Valley or up the Columbia Gorge. Online at kboo.fm. And you can call 877-500-5266. To talk to a real live human being who will register your pledge of financial support for your community radio. Coming up, it's Pacific Underground with guest Jeff Chang, author of We Gonna Be All Right, Notes on Race and Resegregation. There's a lot more coming up through the afternoon, so stay tuned.
This is KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, and you're listening to Pacific Underground, the radio show where Asians and Pacific Islanders take the mic into our own hands. I'm Ellen Montesilio.
And I'm Tabitha Tia. This is a special KBOO membership drive show. We'll be airing an interview with writer and journalist Jeff Chang. Then we're re-airing a part of our conversation with Chinese-American comedian Christina Wong.
Jeff Chang is an author who focuses mainly on hip-hop culture and music. He has a new book called We Gonna Be All Right, Notes on Race and Resegregation. He spoke with Pacific Underground producers Pamela Santos and Kanan Schlesinger.
So your book, We Gonna Be All Right, Notes on Race and Resegregation, you titled one of your chapters, The In-Betweens. We definitely wanted to hear from you about how that in-betweenness applies to Asian American identity, just being caught up between whiteness and blackness.
Yeah, I think, you know, I first of all, the book is sort of in some ways like a thank you note to the movement for Black Lives for raising these questions, putting them front and center back into the national discourse and consciousness, and being about it, right? Just being unapologetic, being powerful and forceful and inclusive and visionary and expansive about it, and for offering us ways to rethink race and racial justice, you know, in the U.S., especially in this particular moment. So I couldn't do that without actually addressing my particular place as somebody who comes from Chinese and Native Hawaiian descent, right? So the essay came from that. It was, in part a response to my editor saying, there's not enough you in here. And I'm like, I have a very hard time. I've always had a very hard time writing in first person. And even in this essay, it's written in second person. But it, I think, allowed me to be able to be a little bit more explorative of the ambivalences and the sort of privileges that come with being in between, right? So being able to look at both the, you know, oppression side of it, as well as questions of anti-blackness, and to really understand that the in-betweens are about being able to have the privilege to not take a stand, to sit on the fence, to disengage, to step away from the battle, to wait to see how it all shakes out, and then choose a side. And that's the essence, I think, of privilege. And to be able to do that at the same time while recognizing that, you know, our histories come from exclusion, of overcoming exclusion, of overcoming, you know, discrimination and struggle, you know, and what does that mean? How does it change us? How does it traumatize people in different kinds of ways? How does it justify really, really bad politics and thinking, as well as very powerful liberatory, you know, types of thinking as well. And so I try to get inside the in-between, so to speak, in the essay, and to use kind of, you know, a bit of my own story as an entry point to be able to get into talking about all of these types of questions.
I was really taken by that chapter in particular because it was a huge departure from the rest of the book. And it was like really real. It was really vulnerable. It seems like you really like put yourself out there. And in addition to the in-betweenness as it applies to like Asian Americanness, somewhere along that spectrum of white supremacy and black liberation, is like your personal in-betweenness in your story as an Asian American trying to negotiate these issues. Can you talk a little bit more about your experience as you move through these issues, as you kind of try to digest them and place yourself within them?
Sure. It was a really, really difficult, you know, essay to write. And I think it's still even hard to kind of talk about it in some ways. I've never really wanted to make myself the center of this, because it's not a really, I don't really think it's about that in the end. You asked, so I guess I have to answer. I grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii, and I grew up pretty staunchly middle class, you know, working class on my mom's side, working class on my dad's side, that then comes into money, like, kind of strikes it big in some ways. Not that big, but big enough that we can move to a suburb of Honolulu. I spent, you know, my childhood basically kind of in between the, you know, the town and the country. My grandparents are on the countryside on the windward side of Oahu, and between this sort of, I wouldn't say, you know, impoverished, but definitely like not necessarily high income or middle income type of neighborhood. And I went to a private school, although I was a scholarship kid. So I was kind of in between in all these different kinds of ways. You know, as a scholarship kid, I had to serve my peers lunch. So that kind of marked me class-wise within the school. And that, I think, gave me sort of a formative class consciousness. And these are all the kinds of things that sort of come to bear later on, because I moved to California to go to school. And suddenly, for the first time, I'm confronting the fact that, you know, on the continent, I'm really a minority. It's really stark. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens, mundane microaggressions to near violence, and also seeing it happen to a lot of friends that I was making too, and trying to reconcile that during a period when, you know, trying to figure out your identity is core to who you are anyways, right? At that particular point in life, early adulthood, late teenagehood, whatever. And so, you know, that all comes to bear in there, along with this sort of political awakening, because we were coming of age during the culture wars, and Asian Americans were playing a very specific role at that particular point in the culture wars, kind of being batted around, used as a tool by conservative folks to oppose affirmative action, at the same time that a lot of folks were pushing for racial justice, you know, in a very kind of explicit way, in solidarity with communities of color and feminists and queer folks as well. So, all of that kind of figured in to my coming of age. And I think that's the period that I tried to revisit as I was thinking about these kinds of questions, because they kind of indelibly marked me. They contributed to my sense of who I am today and how I need to be as a parent now moving forward with kids.
That was writer Jeff Chang talking with Pamela Santos and Kenan Schlesinger.
Hey, you're listening to KBOO Portland, and it is our fall membership drive. And right now, you're listening to Pacific Underground, and I am one of the producers for Pacific Underground, Jenny Yokoyama, and I'm joined with one of my other fellow producers, Kenan Schlesinger.
Hi.
How you doing, Kenan?
I'm tired. I need coffee.
I know, because you were up, like, editing that episode, getting it all ready for everybody's listening ears right now.
Yeah, I hope you guys are enjoying it. Jeff Chang is awesome. We have some of his stuff here if you guys care to win it by renewing your membership or joining. Give us a call.
877.
You have your phone right there.
I know. Pick it up and do the 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Or you can also go online at kboo.fm. And as Kenny was just saying, we have some stuff to give away if you are one of those people who's ready to renew your membership or join right now. We got Jeff Chang's book, We Gonna Be All Right. What other books do we got? We got other stuff too. We also have tickets.
We got tickets. We have free download codes for awesome API artists that we featured on our show. We have another book by Jeff Chang. If you're like really into Jeff Chang, or you want to be into Jeff Chang because you're really digging what you're hearing,
into Jeff Chang.
He has a book that's way bigger than We Gonna Be All Right. We Gonna Be All Right is something like 150 pages. He has another one that's much bigger. It's called Who We Be, A Cultural History of Race in Post-Civil Rights America.
And so how much? It's $5 a month? $5 a month? And they can get the book, We Can Be All Right?
Yep. Just $5 a month.
$5 a month. And to me, that seems like, you know, that's like nothing.
Yeah. That's right? Like not having one of the many drinks you no doubt have a week. Just give one of them up. You'll be healthier and you'll be more woke, I guess.
Well, you're going to be all right.
Yeah, you're going to be all right.
And so if you tune into our show every month, you know that, you know, this is our first year on the air. And I think Cable has just been really awesome at supporting Pacific Underground. You know, we're the only like show, basically like radio show, I think in Oregon for APIs that's focused about telling API stories. And it's produced by only APIs here at Cable. It's pretty amazing that
it's
we
true.
Actually came have enough APIs. Yes, there's Pamela Santos, our other producer, you know. The show first started off with just two people back in January, and we've grown to a collective of five people now. And, you know, so it's pretty amazing to see what KBOO has supported. And that's one thing that I absolutely love is that they've encouraged us so much to tell these stories because they know that this is the only platform that we get to tell them on. So give us a call here and show KBOO that you support and that you want this type of programming on the air. It's 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Or go online at
kboo.fm. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah, click on the donate.
Do it.
I think it was actually great that you didn't start out with that chapter because I think the earlier chapters laid the groundwork. You're putting the background and the context in when you're talking about college spaces and also the ways that cities have changed. And I think most importantly for me, before I would get to that part where you had the children's rhyme, that I'm going to say, even though I kind of I hate it in my mouth saying it. So
I hear you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Ching Chong Chinaman sitting on a fence trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents. And as Kanan here knows that I talk about Queens all the time and just thinking about that in rap music, like I know that line.
Yeah.
But you were able to talk about class in this too.
Yeah,
along with race.
It's a serious part of it. And you know, the a lot of the ways in which the data and the image of Asian Americans as these tiger families and tiger clans with like the super achieving, you know, kids, you know, a lot of the ways that gets twisted is a deliberate way to kind of obscure questions of class in the Asian American community. And in California, for instance, there's been a big debate about disaggregating, you know, Asian American ethnic data. And in some respects, that still only gets to part of the question because we haven't looked at stratification in the Asian American community as deeply as we could. And certainly the folks who have, their work isn't publicized all as much. And yeah, at the same time, there's this small, very vocal minority of conservative Asian Americans who have captured the media's imagination, you know, around the Peter Leung case and then now around aggregation of data and questions of affirmative action, that kind of thing. I mean, the data all shows that we're a very, you know, diverse community, income-wise, wealth-wise, that the foreclosure crisis impacted Asians dramatically. You know, wealth dropped by over half in those years of the foreclosure crisis. Hasn't necessarily been recovered since then. And the data also shows that Asian Americans are overwhelmingly for racial justice. Two-thirds favor affirmative action. Large majorities and pluralities favor any number of bills that would be considered, ideas that would be considered liberal. And yet the media thinks that we're this grand mystery, that there's this, that there are these huge debates. You know, they play up, I think, this very vocal minority of conservative Asian Americans who do exist. I don't doubt that they are trying to organize. I know it. I see it. I write about it in this particular chapter. I describe my feelings of ambivalence about it. You know, but there's still a very small minority of folks. They're not gaining ground. So, you know, the question started as one about class, and it kind of branched out. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that you know, we do definitely need more light shed on the question of class stratification in the Asian American community. It would give us a much better picture and understanding of why it is that so many Asian Americans support racial justice measures.
I wanted to bring up Grace Lee Boggs because you mentioned her at some like really important points in your writing. And I think she's a really notable person because her philosophy, her ethics, her just approach to racial and social justice is so human. It centers around empathy and like humanizing everyone. But, you know, she didn't work directly with any sort of Asian American Pacific Islander social justice movements. She was working to help solidify and increase Black power in the United States. So can you talk about like how it's so difficult to find a mouthpiece for the API community that really encompasses such like a pan-ethnic made up group's feelings and experiences?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we're still kind of in formation, so to speak, right? Around these kinds of questions. You know, part of the difficulty of that is just what might be described of as the nature of Asian American identity, right? We're still in the process of trying to figure out what that is. And this is a population, of course, that has moved from being overwhelmingly U.S. born, you know, when the Third World Strike breaks out in 1968, for instance, and the rise of the Asian American movement that Karen Ishizuka writes about so wonderfully in this new, you know, history, sort of the people, to now, where it's, you know, a majority foreign-born population, where immigration laws have changed dramatically in the last two decades, especially to emphasize skilled labor over family reunification. And in that regard, you know, created a much more homogenous looking not necessarily ethnically, but sort of class-wise, immigrant population. And so, you know, it's very complicated. It's really complicated. What happens when you've got a large number of Asian Americans who don't consider themselves Asian American, like they're mobile, right? They live between here and Taipei, you know, or between here and Seoul, or between here and Hong Kong, between here and Mumbai. You know, it's, and you just go on and on and on, in that regard. It's we're still kind of in formation, I think, in that regard. What we see is sort of the beginnings of this flowering of Asian American culture in the public sort of middle, American, you know, sort of mainstream. You know, we're at the very beginnings of that. And we've certainly had our thinkers and our writers, but, you know, the first sentence of this essay is, you went to college to learn how to be Asian American. It's something that is still being created. It's still sort of an idea that we are toying with and trying to build of all these different, sometimes disparate, sometimes dissonant parts.
I'm really glad you made those two references to formation. I got really into Beyonce. Anyway, I brought it up because I just thought all of the different references that you bring in from culture were so spot on. Like first, even the title, Kendrick Lamar, the We Gonna Be All Right. But then your conclusion is titled Making Lemonade.
Yes.
And a lot of what I think I took from it is lessons that I think can apply really to anybody reading your book, whether they are in communities of color, API or not. I think a large part of it had to do with using culture as a way to bring people in on these harder political concepts. Mm-hmm. And even though it's all the way at the end.
It felt like a gift. Like I was at the end of writing this really fast book and then Lemonade dropped and I'm like, whoa, you know, it kind of time stood still for a couple of weeks, I think. And the deadline kind of got pushed out a little bit, but I felt like it summed up so many of the sort of ideas that have been floating, you know, in the air since Ferguson, right? And questions and ideas that have been raised by the movement for Black Lives, and in particular, this notion of transformational justice. And so, you know, on the first reading, this is like an album that's about like a, you know, about a lover who's being cheated on and all the emotions that she ended up going through and the sort of anger, the despair, the depression, and then this sort of trying to find a sense of grace in it all and reconciling. And I was like, dang, you know what? She obviously wants to read this in light of what's been happening in the world. I mean, freedom is the most explicit note of that, but as well, I thought maybe this is kind of about like the moment that we're in socially, you know, maybe this is about the direction of the movement. And sure enough, the ending feels so convergent with Grace Lee Boggs' ideas, with Robin Kelly's reading of James Baldwin as being about the politics of love, and not like this sappy milquetoast, turn the other cheek type of vibe, although I think that there's a lot of spirituality in that. I'm certainly not mocking, you know, the sort of notion of that either. And also Carrie Mae Weems' most recent work, thinking about grace and dignity in the face of ongoing struggle. And I was like, dang, this is all of it. It's all there. It's everything. It's too good not to be written about. So that's kind of where I wanted to end it. And it ends on a note of hope, right? Like, we do have to have a reason to be able to get up in the morning. We do have to, with all our criticality and all of our anger, be able to figure out what is the way forward. You know, when that anger starts turning to depression and we realize the depth of trauma that's set in, like, how do you undo that? How do you heal? And how do you heal not just yourself, but how do you heal the community and who is considered part of that community? And so, you know, you go back to Grace's idea that revolution is not only about bloodshed. It's not about warfare. It's not replacing one group of oppressors with another. It's about transformation. That's where we need to end up at the end of the day. So it's about consciousness, human consciousness, raising that human consciousness. And so that's kind of where we ended up with it all.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is our fall membership drive. I know you're out there listening, enjoying this interview. This interview has been brought to you by some API folks such as myself and Jenna. Hi, Jenna.
Howdy, what's up?
And we are producing content here for all the people in the marginalized communities, API communities, people of color. And we implore everyone out there that wants to be a racial justice ally to give us a call. Ask yourself, what are my gifts? What are my privileges? Can I give a negligible amount of my love and wealth to have a massive impact on my community, the mouthpiece for all these marginalized voices? This is the time to do that. So pick up your phone, dial 877-500-5266. And, you know, if you're online and you don't have a phone, go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. It's really that easy. It makes a huge impact, and you can support stuff like you're hearing right now. I have this book right in front of me, and it's a book that you can have in your own hands as well. It's by the author that you've been listening to, Jeff Chang. It's called We Gonna Be All Right, Notes on Race and Resegregation. And if you're wondering what resegregation is and a little bit about that, I got a little passage for you. Is that okay if
let's
I read
hear,
that?
Let's hear, Ken.
Okay. Resegregation happens through design and through apathy. It also grows through our blindness, whether willed, imperceivable, or fixed, through the best of our intentions, to the deep connections between us all. Silence over resegregation has led us to this historical moment. So we're refusing to be silent. We're going to speak about it. We're going to call it out. We're going to interview really smart folks about it. And we're going to bring that straight to you. But we can't keep doing that if we don't have your support. So what do they have to do, Jana?
They got to give us a call at 877-500-5266. Again, on the phone, that's 877-500-5266. You know, all this kind of programming is only possible because KBOO's members make it possible. You know, we'd love to bring you radio for free, but, you know, we got to keep the lights on. You know, all the stuff that makes it possible for you to hear what's on the radio costs a little bit of money. So we ask that if you can give, you know, like $5 a month. If you can get $5 a month, you can get a membership here to KBOO, join the KBOO family, plus get the We Gonna Be All Right. You know, there's been some people who have donated online at kboo.fm, and we want to take the time to thank them. We got a whole bunch of people, so we got to do the bell thing because it's my favorite part. Joan in Southeast Portland, Rolf in Southeast Portland, David in Corvallis, yay! I think that's all. Ah, in Southeast Portland, Zarina in Southeast Portland, yeah, go Southeast, what's up? We got Mark in Portland, Marcel in Northeast Portland. What's up, East Portland? What else we got? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We have Kathleen in Mount Angel, Oregon. I have no idea where that is, but thank you for supporting us,
what's
Kathleen.
What's up, Mount Angel?
We got Martin in Southeast Portland.
Another
Mary
Southeast,
in
up?
Northwest Portland. Woo-hoo. Ted, thank you, Ted. Really, thank you. Southwest Portland. He loves KBOO News and Democracy Now, and so do we.
Totally.
I mean, I rely on that every day for my feeling informed and connected to the world.
Pretty much. I want news that's not going to make me feel angry.
Mm. Well, hard avoiding that, but it's presented
angry
in the best
in a good way
possible.
Yeah,
yes.
Angry in a good way.
Angry and empowered. Nicole, Northeast Portland, we did not forget about you.
Bing. Can
you get three.
We're going to call that the East Side Portland like love fest right there. Like, thank you, everybody, on the East Side of Portland. And I just want to, you know, point about the East Side of Portland. We're just going to be real here. Let's get real here during this pitch break. On the East Side of Portland, we like to think of it as the, like, POC side of Portland. And that's who we hope are listening to the show right now, because, honestly, we do make this show. The APIs here at KBOO, we make the show Pacific Underground because we want to tell the stories about our community. So Pacific Underground is produced by 5 different APIs here at KBOO. If you don't know API, it's Asian Pacific Islanders. So we got all sorts of different backgrounds. And one thing we just have in common is that we're all storytellers, and we just love telling stories of people. And it's not just because stories are fun to hear. It's because it's important to hear who's in your community. And I don't know, like, what people are bringing to Portland. We think of Portland as, like, you know, the whitest city in America. But if you actually, like, live here, you'll know that there is a really, really rich community, especially amongst the APIs. We love to talk. It's not very hard to get interviews. We're all like, oh, my God, everybody keep talking. So give us a call at 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Of course, we always have a goal that we're trying to meet. Help us meet that. And let's get back to this. If you are an ally, because we know that only 1 to 2% of Portland is actually API. So likely who is listening to us is actually not API people. So if you consider yourself an ally and you really enjoy actually hearing these stories that aren't maybe from your community, and you love what that brings to you and to what your informed knowledge of who's in your community, give us a call. Support our stories. Support Kane's freaking ridiculously good interview right now, Jeff Chang. So good. I just gotta give it to you, man. It is good. I know he's all blushing, like, oh man. So show Kanan some love. 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm. Support us. You know, we got the tickets right now. We got tickets to, what's her name? Christina Wong, her show here in October. If you can donate just $5 a month, you can get that. Or Jeff Chang's book, We Gonna Be All Right. We got all sorts of stuff. Give us a call. Again, Kanan, what's the phone number?
877-500-5266. If you are on the web, kboo.fm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, that's not a fury, but you ain't say nothing. Millions of subs, but you ain't change nothing. Millions of hits, but you ain't gave nothing. Millions of leader, but you ain't leave nothing.
Can you talk about the perception that like extends, I think, beyond the white community, that is kind of condescending and paints students as naive, reckless, soliciting pity?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, I think the one of the central kind of paradoxes of the moment is the fact that in our media, sort of in the mainstream, in our institutions, we're sort of painted this picture of diversity, right? The sort of notion that we all kind of live in this happy rainbow nation, and that we attend perfectly integrated schools, and that everything is awesome, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, you know, all of the indices show that we're resegregating, that inequality is increasing between the races at a very dramatic rate, has been for decades. We reached peak desegregation in the schools in 1989. And since that time, we've been moving backwards. And so for me, student protests have really been about that. Like, can you imagine a place in society that traffics more thoroughly in images of diversity than university institutions, who often themselves are not that diverse? And you have schools that are 95% white that will work very hard to find students of color on campus and take pictures of them and put them in their brochures, on their websites, right, in their application packets, all of the materials to signal to, you know, parents and to students the vitality of their institution, right? The sort of progressiveness of their institution. Nancy Leong, who's a brilliant scholar, has a term for this. She calls it racial capitalism, that people and institutions get capital from being able to draw on images of diversity, the picture of diversity, right? And so what students are calling into question from Missouri on to over 100 other campuses was the gap between the picture of diversity and the reality of what's been happening on the ground. Mm-hmm. That's been the real issue. The debate has been sidetracked into all of these weird questions about trigger warnings and about safe spaces and such. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you look at the actual demands, and they're on the web, right? There's a website called thedemands.org, and people have done analyses of these. Like, precious few students at precious few campuses were pushing for any kind of change in the speech codes. The overwhelming majority of student activists were demanding that there be more faculty of color, that they were demanding that there be more staff of color, that there be more culturally sensitive programming and classes and curriculum and departments, and that there be mental health professionals of color. And that's because since the last peak of universities paying attention to this, which is around the early 90s when the term campus climate became very popular and widely used, for the most part, a lot of these programs have either been cut back drastically or have been stalled in terms of size and growth, even as their populations have sometimes been exploding. That's what students are trying to call attention to, was that particular, you know, that particular paradox, that particular tension that's happening on the campuses, but is literally a microcosm of what's happening in society more in general.
So would you say diversity in this incarnation, as we're seeing it everywhere in all these institutions, is like a form of complacency? I know you talk a lot about crisis cycles, and it seems like the uproar on college campuses we've seen in the past year and a half is like a disruption of that complacency, but it still seems like there's a pretty widespread complacency in reaction to these protests.
Yeah, I think that there's a backlash as well. And I think that the backlash is happening amongst liberals, amongst white liberals, as well as amongst conservatives. There's, you know, very sort of strange bedfellows being made right now between the sort of freedom of expression libertarians and sort of the anti-multiculturalist liberals that is repeating what happened, I think, in the 80s and the 90s. And so we're going through a period of culture wars around these questions of demographic change and cultural change. And those are the cycles that I try to describe. These are cycles that are actually happening
as opposed to cycles that we imagine, you know, should be happening based on, you know, whatever readings of the past. I don't try to read the future. I try to read the past,
right,
as to what's happening, to what's happening right now. And the reality is that diversity becomes decoupled from equity. And in the decoupling, we are able to see how folks can sort of capitalize on the picture of diversity while, you know, while simultaneously letting the question of equity fall to the side.
And so you're talking about, like, not claiming to be able to look into the future, which I feel like is super valid. And it's something that I needed to hear because, like, I'm tempted, you know, because you've just released this book, like, what do you think is going to happen is, like, the question that
the pundits
on the media are asked, you know?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I know that, like, what we need to do is to try to figure out ways to find our connections and to think about, you know, the convergences. I've been really heartened to see, you know, folks joining in solidarity, you know, with Standing Rock Sioux folks, you know, the No Doubt mm-hmm. stuff, and also, you know, to be able to see, like, what's happening between the undocumented movement and the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, we're about to launch Culture Strike. Is about this organization that I helped to co-found. Is about to launch an initiative called Until We All Are Free, in which we try to look at the question of what it means to be invisibilized as a Black undocumented person, and to also have other non-Black migrant and immigrant communities question and interrogate and undo their anti-Blackness. You know, so there's all of these different kinds of things that are happening. Certainly there have been all kinds of consonances between, you know, the movement around sexual assault on the campuses to combat sexual assault and end sexual assault, as well as the movements to, you know, sort of undo racism. And I think that those kinds of things are happening organically. What needs to happen is for folks to be able to now figure out how to bring in disaffected white folks,
mm-hmm.
The sort of declining middle class, the rapidly declining middle class, as well as the working class and the completely alienated white underclass as well. Those are the folks who may need to travel far in some respects around the question of race, but who are in some ways, you know, natural accomplices in trying to figure out, you know, how we move all of this stuff forward.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you know, like while we're working towards these changes and kind of waiting for them to manifest, one of the helpful and heartening ways of overcoming the daily oppression that so many people experience is documentation. And you talked mm-hmm. about, like, the microaggressions project and,
yes.
you know, sharing stories, supporting one another. Can you talk a little bit about, like, where else we're seeing this and, like, what kind of power that has?
You know, so I think that, well, the first thing to say is that this is a really fertile period for all kinds of expression, I think, because of the inspiration of the Black Lives Matter movement. It's created the ground for artists and for, you know, journalists and for thinkers to really enter the question of what it means to live together. And so it's been really heartening to be able to see, gosh, all of this great music coming out, all of this great contemporary art being made, all of these amazing theatrical pieces and performances being done. And then also to read the writings of people who are, you know, moving, you know, on the ground, these movements, and to explore the sort of, you know, joy that comes when people are starting to figure things out together. All of this stuff is really, really key. I've been, I think, you know, really inspired by the letter writing movement that Asian Americans have picked up in writing letters to their parents, having conversations with their parents around Black Lives Matter. And I've been really inspired by just the work that folks are being able to do across these creative sectors, because what I think it does is it begins to build our imagination for what change can actually look like. That, to me, is the fundamental thing, you know, before we can even get to the change, we have to bring into being these visions and ideas and notions that, you know, allow us to think that what was impossible can be possible. We're in that moment right now. It's really, really exciting.
This is Mike Crenshaw. Are we on yet?
We are.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening to KBOO today. Thank you, everybody, that stopped in the building down here at 20 Southeast 8th. All the people who've been calling, 877-500-5266. A lot of renewing members. We also want to have new members. But we're having soup down here. You know, it's a good time. But I just really was inspired to get on the microphone and say that it's such an awesome thing to have Jeff Chang on the radio. I've been following Jeff Chang since Can't Stop, Won't Stop. You know, I've got a copy at the home. And, of course, I'm a fan and contributor to hip-hop culture. And I just appreciate everything that Jeff Chang has done for the culture in a literary sense and to elevate the thinking and the consciousness of the history. And to now hear him talking about these issues that face us in our communities today is a wonderful thing. And if you appreciate this as well as I do, and I know you do, I want you to pick up your phone or stop on by or get online at kboo.fm. If you want to come by, we're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Be a member today. If you pick up your phone, we're at 877-500-5266.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm still so sick. Kana's interview's so good. We're just going to say that again. So if you
stop.
I know. I'm Pamela. I'm Pamela right behind us. You're listening right now to the fall membership drive here on KBOO. I'm Jenna. I'm joined here with Kanan Schlesinger, who you're just hearing in the interview there, and Pamela Santos. We're three producers for Pacific Underground, the show that we like to call APIs, taking the mic into our own hand, because we are like the only API show, I think, on the radio.
Seems like it.
Here in the Pacific Northwest that is just dedicated to telling stories of the API community up here. But you know, we got a lot of stuff going on. Kanan, what do we got going on?
We have so much going on. Well, first of all, we didn't say this last time around. Lewis, we know that you renewed. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing the love, Lewis.
And we also need to give a shout out. It's someone very important's birthday today. Whose birthday is it again?
It is Teresa Reffords, who, if you guys don't know, I'd like to think of her as, first and foremost, one of the newest volunteers to KBOO.
Answering phones, right?
She would get her answering phones. And also, she's just one of the most prominent voices here in Portland. I don't know where we would be without her. She has just raised...
I don't like thinking about it.
I know. It's like, don't go anywhere. Don't you ever move. Ever. You stay here. I mean, I think right now she's not here because she is leading some kind of protest downtown, isn't she?
Often is.
But
I don't know. I'd like to think of her
as the busiest woman in Portland. But the busiest woman in Portland also, besides being busy leading protests and volunteering here at KBOO and running 1,000 campaigns to make sure that there's social justice here in Portland, it is also her birthday. Happy birthday, Teresa Rayford. Happy birthday to you. You're so freaking busy, but we love what you do. So if you are a Teresa Rayford fan, maybe that's why you call in and support KBOO, because she supports KBOO. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. Give us a call. Join the KBOO family. You know, we're just trying to, you know, increase the love here. We also, of course, we always have gifts. We always have gifts for those people who are looking for a little bit of incentive or something. Mm-hmm. We got tickets to Christina Wong, who is a comedian. She was on our very, very first ever Pacific Underground. We are fans of hers. But she was on our first show. She's going to be in this episode as well, right? She's coming up. We have parts of her interview. So if you can just donate $5 a month, that's like $60 a year. It's only $5 a month. That's like nothing. You can get tickets to Christina Wong for her show, The Wong Street Journal, which is coming up October 13th through 15th and also October 20th through 22nd. We got very, very limited tickets. So give us a call to get those, 877-500-5266.
We'll give you these tickets.
There's only one pair of tickets.
My goodness. What are you waiting for? 877-500-5266 KBOO.FM. Click on the donate button, please. Let's see. We got a bunch of other gifts too. And also, if you don't know who Christina Wong is, you should just, you know, stay tuned, because we have a segment from our very first episode ever coming up. And it's a particularly hilarious segment, and also a little bit poignant too.
She's hilarious.
She's a good combination of like
real. We also need to make sure we talk about all the other API stuff. Like, this hour is just all about supporting API artists and just bringing you API artists in terms of like their sound and through the radio and through their gifts. Because we also have a shirt that we're giving away from local API artist Anna Vo, who designed. I think they designed it just for KBOO, didn't they?
I think they
did.
Oh my gosh. And you want this thing. It's so freaking cool.
It's really rad. It's right there, I think.
Yeah. But if you could see where we're pointing at a picture right now. It's got aliens. It's awesome. So thank you, Anna Vo, very much for designing that for KBOO, because Anna supports KBOO. So be like Anna. 877-500-5266. We got volunteers waiting to take your call. Help us meet our goal. We're like winding down in our hours of the fall membership drive, and we really could use all the support that you guys want to give. Show the love.
And if you want to discover some new music from API artists, we actually have a gift for you if you want to renew your membership, become a member. Hip-hop artist Jason Chu, who you've been hearing intermittently take us out and into these segments in the background, we have a free download code for a song off his latest album, The Love. So if you are interested in discovering some new work, getting out there, please.
Donate online. Yeah, if you donate online, you can get that free song from his latest album, Rivals, that just dropped just like a couple weeks ago. And so thank you very much to Jason Chu and to Joe Kai for donating that song. Came and supporting Community Radio. So give us a call, 877-500-5266. Back to Pacific Underground.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a membership drive edition of Pacific Underground on KBOO Portland. Coming up next on the show, we're airing part of an interview with Chinese-American performer, writer, and comedian Christina Wong. She's best known for her solo shows like Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and the Wong Street Journal.
This interview originally aired way back on our first show ever, and we're going to play a shorter version for you all. Christina talked with Pamela Santos back in January.
Do you feel like your art is your kind of way to do some of that social change work?
I don't know how I became political in the work. I think I just find, especially with theater, when you work on something so long, it needs to be about something. In theater, I really craft my shows. Like, a lot of people will know me from the essays I've written, what I call clickbait essays, like 9 whack things white guys say to deny their Asian fetish. Like, they think that that's the start and end of all I do. I do a lot of things that, like, obviously, Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was a pretty intense procedure to create. And I just feel like things, if you're going to spend so long on something, they have to be about something bigger than yourself and all the ways life intersects. I spent years working on shows and researching it. And I just feel like you, like me in front of an audience, that is a political act, right? Mm-hmm. I am a marginalized person they haven't seen before. And that's a big deal. Like, I'm going to take up space and time, and I'm right here. So it
kind of brought this back to me when I watched Wong Street Journal. It was on Fuse, I think.
Fusion,
thank you. Look at that. Yeah. I don't even know. It's the new channel. Was it the channel or the show was called Fusion?
No, the channel's called Fusion, and the show is Alicia Menendez.
Thank you.
Tonight, I think.
I thought it was one of those, you know, the new MTVs.
Oh, there's so many new channels.
That's what I'm saying.
There's so many new channels.
That's why.
That's one of them. But they're actually really interesting. I don't want to go into personal stuff, but I went did a meeting there and like I was shocked. It was the only pitch meeting I've ever been to where I walk in and there's a dry erase board and it's filled with words like police brutality, intersectionality.
Yes.
Like, I was like, did you steal this from a union office? I've never been to a television network where such progressive terms were on a blackboard. And I was like, feminist Christmas for me. I was like, is this seriously a TV meeting? Because like usually when I'm in those settings, I have to like turn down the activists and be like, I'm just an entertainer. Hey, I'm so cute. Like that's usually the strategy that I use when I do meetings. And it was like so great because I could just talk as myself and just be radical and political, and they loved it. But yeah, that was after I did that appearance on their show.
And so I pictured like, yeah, you can make you know, car modeling a radical act when you know, like hock a loogie on like people. Like you're really good at the sound of it, actually. It's really like just like, oh, I gotta practice it for me. But I'm just like, no, you've gotten it.
Yeah,
down.
No, I grew up, my grandma used to, we didn't live in Chinatown, but my grandma used to take me to Chinatown to go grocery shopping. And so I witnessed it a lot. And, you know, I did not expect that. Yeah, so the Fusion TV appearance you're referencing, for those who don't know, is I was asked after my essay about Asian fetish came out to talk about there's some statistic on an app, Are You Interested, that revealed that women, Asian women across the board, were preferred by men of all races.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone who worked at the app and me were being interviewed, and they wanted to get my opinion on it as Asian women. And this is right. This is the situation that we often find ourselves in, is, hey, can you talk about race in a fraction of 6 minutes? And I was just like, I was on my scooter riding up to the studio going, God, I hate this. I don't know how to do this. There's nothing like big or meaningful that I can do in that short amount of time. And I was like, this is a news station. No one's going to even watch this. So I was like, what if I, you know, so this is what I always ask myself as a comedian. All right, okay, like, because I have screwed up interviews before when I've just tried to talk very logical, like an academic around it. And I'm not an academic. I've done a lot of reading. I'm smart, I think. But, you know, like, I was just like, how am I going to handle this situation? And this is where I'm basically this token. I was like, okay, well, what's good about the situation? And that's what I ask. As a comedian, you always have to think, okay, what are the two... There's always the first two obvious ways you go about it. What's the third answer around it? So one is I could be like, no, this is awful. Yuck, yuck. You don't get it. No, no, no. And be that mm-hmm. screaming woman who then loses her voice. And then the second is just be like, yeah, it's fine, I guess. And then the third is just to completely, like, what is it?
I and have it in it. My head.
At first, it was sort of upsetting because I feel like it just feeds into this the fetishization of Asian women and the sort of the stereotype that Asian women are these submissive, delicate model girlfriend types. But as I thought about it, I took a moment and I was like, suck it, white ladies. I got it. I had to live under your shadow all through high school, and now I'm the hottest thing on earth, and I can do anything, and some crazy white guy will still like this.
Yeah, delicious. Who would not want a piece of that?
It was just like, wow, how is this a good thing? How can I go over the top like I won the lottery? And I, so I told the producer there, like, I'm looking into a box with a camera, so I can't see anybody. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to see what it looked like after. I didn't get to see the funny graphics and stuff that they used. I didn't get to see the guy's face. So I just found all these props backstage, a Viking helmet, compressed air in a can. I found all that backstage and I just put them in order. I'm like, okay, I'm going to blow my nose. I'm going to spit. And then I'm going to blow my face. Like, I was just like an improv actor. It's like, go more and more crazy. And just the whole thesis here is I won the game. Suck it, white ladies. I got it. And look at all the stuff I can get away with because now statistically somebody wants this.
You're listening to Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Alan Montecelio.
And I'm Tabitha Teo. Pacific Underground is produced by Jenna Yokoyama, Kanan Schlesinger, Pamela Santos, Alan Montecelio, and Tabitha Teo. Did I say your last name right?
No, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think you got Kanan's wrong. I think okay. It's Schlesinger and Montecelio. We can also switch roles if you'd prefer.
Okay. No, I will do this.
All right, you got it. Yeah.
Montecelio.
Yeah.
Pacific Underground is produced by Jenna Yokoyama, Kanan Schlesinger. Schlesinger, Pamela Santos, Alan Montecilio, and Tabitha Teo.
Find us on Facebook and Twitter at PAC Underground. You can also subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. A special thanks to our guests this month, Jeff Chang and Christina Wong.
Our theme music is by Chomp. Pacific Underground is a production of KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon.
Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next month with another episode of Pacific Underground.
Wait, hold on. Not so fast. Come on, get back here. Alan, we gotta announce it. Cue the music.
Pardon me, are you Aaron Burr, sir?
That depends. Who's asking?
Alan, I know you're out there listening somewhere. This is your last show with us for the time being. You're so busy, you're taking some time away to do your thing, to do you. But we just wanted to tell you that we're going to miss you, and we just wanted to do that in a special way that we knew you'd appreciate. We'll miss you. Well, we probably won't miss you that much because we're going to see you all the time. But the show is going to miss you. Before I forget, I need to give a special shout out to Winton White and Jason Chu. Thank you for letting us use your music. And also to freesound.org. Bye for real. More than anyone bargained
for. Can I buy you a drink?
That would be nice.
While we're talking, let me offer you some free advice. Talk.
Oh man, that gave me a little teary-eyed at the end. Like, oh, goodbye, Alan. Well, if you're tuning in right now, you'll see KBOO Portland, and you're tuning in to the Fall Membership Drive. I am Jenny Yokoyama, and I'm joined here with Kanan Schlesinger, and we are two producers for the show you just heard, Pacific Underground, the show where APIs take the mic into our own hands. And if you just listen at the end there, Kanan announced that one of our producers, one of our founding producers, is he's taking some time off from the show and has decided to leave because he's just being too busy being successful everywhere else, so we can't really complain about that. But bad. Bye, Alan. We love you. And if you appreciate, though, everything that Alan has done, give us a call here at 877-500-5266. We are still in our membership drive, and we still got a little bit of monies to go. We got so little monies left to go to raise during this hour, and we'd really, really appreciate it if you guys could help us reach that goal. We got, like, only, like, $160 to go. So what that is if you can just donate, say, $10 a month. $10 a month. That's it. $10 a month. You would get us, like, leap and bounds closer to our goal. You can get that shirt from API artist Anna Vo, the one with the aliens that I'm pointing at it right now, and it's got all these eyes and craziness, and it looks so freaking cool, and you can walk around Portland with your freaking cool KBOO shirt, and everyone goes, who was that? And you go, that's Anna Vo, and everyone goes like, oh my god, who's that? And you're like, somebody who's in the know. I'm in the know because I'm a member at KBOO, and that's how I got this shirt, by calling 877-500-5266.
Kathleen, thank you for renewing. And Lewis in Happy Valley.
Dude.
I don't know what you're doing, all those Lewises out there.
Second
but
Lewis of the
keep
hour.
It up.
Okay, so we're going to make a special pitch out to everybody named Lewis who is listening to KBOO today. You need to get on the Lewis bandwagon and become a member of KBOO today. And maybe they're doing it online at kboo.fm. You know, real quick, Kane, before we go, I just want to say real quick, when you put that little tribute to Alan there at the end of the show, it just reminded me of why Pacific Underground and why shows like Pacific Underground are so important here at KBOO, because Alan was actually one of our founding members. He was one of the people who put the show together, him and Pamela, and then they brought me in, and then I brought you in, and then we brought somebody else in, and that's how we give voice to people here in Portland, here in KBOO, is that somebody has an idea, and KBOO goes, yes, do it. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, we don't have any shows for APIs right now. And Alan and Pam put it together, and they just put together this collective. And I didn't know anything about radio, and I learned so much from Alan. I've learned so much from Pam. And, you know, that's how our collective grows, and that's how it builds, and that's how so many shows here at KBOO are like.
Yeah, it's incredible. No other radio stations are operating like that. You won't see relationships like this at any other radio station. This is a true community, and this community cannot flourish if we don't have community support. And so I know that you are listening to this. I know you're appreciating it. Please show us your support. Come by. Drop by. Come by the station. What's our address
I know. We're
again?
About to have like Stone Soup soon. So it's 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We're on 8th and Burnside. Come on down. We've been like doing the Stone Soup, like literally where people have just been like throwing stuff into the pot. And it's
beautiful. It's really just like a beautiful metaphor for what this place is. Yeah.
So come on down, you know, bring a little donation, bring a quarter, whatever. Just come down and hang out and join in the party as we're winding down our fall drive. Contribute now, 877-500-5266, or you can contribute online at kboo.fm. Or if you are super uber handy with your smartphone and you got the app and you're like, oh my God, I don't have time for dialing. I don't have time for turning on my computer. I'm just going to go on my app and I'm just going to tap the donate button. Boom. Easy. KBOO loves you. KBOO doesn't waste your time. So give us a call. Once again, 877-500-5266.
At the time of John Coltrane's death in the summer of 1967, he had revolutionized jazz with his innovative, demanding techniques, his depth, and his relentless devotion to his music. He was only 40 years old. Now, nearly 50 years later, he is one of the most dominant influences on post-1960 jazz and has inspired an entire generation of jazz musicians. This Friday, September 23rd, would have been the 90th birthday of John Coltrane, and at KBOO we are going to celebrate with an all-night marathon, including John Coltrane thank you gifts for those who call in to join KBOO before midnight. So join us this Friday night, September 23rd, beginning at 10 p.m. until 6 a.m. as we celebrate the 90th birthday of John Coltrane here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Lair Hill Bistro, located at 2823 Southwest 1st Avenue, a family-owned eatery serving home-cooked food just outside downtown Portland. Lunch was provided by Fatou's Kitchen, a restaurant located on 3601 Northeast MLK, serving Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Latin, African food, and also